Well, good morning, everyone. I'm so sorry to keep jumping around in this program on you, so hopefully you'll recall where we had left off. But I am happy to get my PowerPoint presentation back. Just don't look too closely at the bags under my eyes. But it's all good, and tonight we can go to bed early. So I promised you yesterday of motivating you on those three stories on exercise, remember? And we're going to get that. So exercise actually fit under my E category in this presentation. So when we get to the... You did lots of walking yesterday? Yeah. Good job. That's why she's in the front row student here. So when we come to the E, I'll skip through those exercise slides, but I'll get you to those stories that you can look forward to. But I want to go back and continue our topic of cancer that we were talking about. And so we kind of left off on this slide. Did I speak too soon? Okay, it doesn't want to go back, which is fine. Trust me, the slide before this was where we left off. So we're on to the next slide here. And this gives you a summary list of cancer-causing agents. It's just, again, you know, there's a number of things that can cause cancer, and it's not only diet, right? So that's what I just want to, you know, emphasize. There's a variety of things in our life that can create or help to set up the stage for any disease, including cancer. And that can even be stress, as many of you know, right? Tobacco, alcohol, excess fat can set up that stage as well. Whether it's, you know, saturated fats, you know, trans fats, hydrogenated fats, these type of things you hear about. Meat, interesting enough, there's excessive iron in meat. And this type of iron can actually help increase your risk of cancer, and it substantially increases your risk of heart disease. The type of iron that's found in meat. And we'll talk more about iron when we come to that. Other toxins, benzopyrene, which comes from cooking specifically meat in most cases. So we'll again be mentioning that as the slide goes on. Dairy products can increase our risk. They are mucus producing, which we know can lead to cancer. Viruses. Coffee, excess sun exposure, and so forth. So there's a number of things, even wood dust. So, you know, when you're working with some of these products, you need to have, you know, masks and just really protect yourselves, in many cases, environmentally as well. So this just, again, you know, excess sugar in the diet, even excess salt is not listed here, but excess salt can help set. So really what it is anything that's going to cause your body to be off balance in some way sets up the environment for disease to set in. And remember, cancer is just one of those diseases. So whether you've got cancer or diabetes or heart disease, you know, and in any of these cases, it's not optimal health, is it? And so we want to try to achieve that optimal health regardless. Now, sugar consumption, we know, can actually help lead to cancer. It can cause an imbalance in the body. And a lot of the research that I've been doing with cancer, I've learned that cancer is fungal and yeast-based in many cases. And we know sugars feed yeast. So to me, this made total sense. I used to know that sugar can help increase our risk for cancer, but I didn't totally understand how. But except for the fact it lowers our immune system, which is another situation. But the fact that it grows the excess yeast in our body can be an issue. Oops, sorry. Boosting the immune system, really important, because you need your immune system to kick in to help overcome this cancer. And whether you have cancer or not, you've probably heard the saying that everyone has cancer cells in their body. These are basically cells that are sick. Not healthy cells are considered cancerous cells. And so it's setting up the environment for those to reproduce, or setting up the environment for your healthy cells to reproduce faster to overtake the sick cells. And that's our focus. And of course, the first step is to be aware of cancer symptoms and be tested regularly by your doctor. This is always a good idea. But the second step is to prevent cancer before it ever forms. And I believe I mentioned this on Monday. You know, when someone says to me, I have cancer, how shall I go about it? Well, I tell people, whether you have cancer or not, pretend you do. Everybody should treat their bodies the same way. Whether you have cancer or not, we need to do the exact same thing to heal as well as to prevent. So whether you are fighting cancer or not, this is all relative information to everyone. I showed you colon cancer and the risk of meat eating and how the more meat we consume, the higher the risk of cancer. But interesting enough, how often we eat can increase our risk of cancer as well. And if you were to have two meals a day, your risk of rectal cancer or colon cancer is low. And as it goes up, as we eat more meals, the risk increases. And the reason for it, again, is cleansing the colon, cleansing this area of the body that tends to have a lot of stuff that just sits there and never cleans out and promotes and builds up toxins. And then these toxins actually enter your bloodstream and make us sick. And so a clean colon is important. And it kind of goes under the category of digestion as well. When we're eating food and your food is not totally digested and we eat more food, what is there already begins then to ferment and cause toxins and rots the new food that's coming in. And we can end up with all sorts of digestion disorders. So it's important to empty your stomach completely before we put more food on. If you have leftovers at the end of a meal and you put them in a bowl in your fridge, and let's say the next day you have leftovers again, would you put it in that same bowl of leftovers from the day before?
No.
Well, let's say you decided it was okay because it's only one day, right? Okay, so you put it on there. And the next day you have more leftovers. Would you put it on that bowl now? No. Why? Because that beginning leftover is going to rot and rot all the way through. Think of the exact same situation with your stomach. When your food's not digested, you put more food on, and before long you've got that exact same thing happening as if you were storing up those leftovers day after day. Now, some people say to me, I remember when I taught at a nutrition college for a number of years there, and some of my students would say to me, two meals a day? Are you serious? In fact, they said to me, three meals a day? Are you serious? How could I survive? And then I said, well, I eat two meals most of the time. They go, two meals? You know, how do you function? And, you know, it's about training the body. We train our body to do wrong. We can train our body to do right. And, you know, sometimes we get into this habit of 10 or 11 o'clock at night where we're hungry and we'll eat a meal at 10 or 11 at night. But you remember we talked about that 12-hour fast, really important for the body to heal itself and get the digestion working. So let's say you decide, that's it, after the talk today, I'm not eating anymore at 10 or 11 o'clock, even if it's popcorn. That's my fault. And I love popcorn. And but you know, it doesn't matter what it is. If you put some food on your stomach, you've got a digestion thing happening instead of sleeping. And so you say, you know what, I'm not going to eat tonight. So you go to bed, grumble, rumble, and your stomach is gurgling, and you think you're going to starve to death. There is not a chance you're going to make it through the morning. But you know what? It's because we've trained our body to have that meal, and it's actually prepared for that food. And if you don't give it, it's hungry. So you know what? Just really struggle it out for a good week, sometimes 2 weeks. But after that 2 weeks, you won't be hungry anymore at that time of night. So you just have to retrain your body. And you know, there's nothing wrong with a light fibrous supper. So making that three meals a day, if that's what you need. So a good hearty breakfast, a good hearty lunch, you know, early afternoon kind of idea. And then something light and fibrous so that it's easy digestion. Yes?
So that goes against all the training I had for about almost 30 years now from any diabetic nurse or anything that talked about nutrition or talked about how many meals I should have. They always said
many meals.
You should have three meals and then possibly two or three snacks.
Right. To balance blood sugar levels, right?
I agree with what you just said because that's basically what I learned from my new tapes and new doctors. But I just find it amazing that this is not a normal comment from any person that really should know when they're teaching basically diabetics. I deal with them a lot because I am one. So.
Yes. Well, you know, there's a few things that are a little bit different the way we approach diabetes in general as well. But even going at someone who has hypoglycemia, we're told the same thing, right? To have something with protein and a carbohydrate or something as a snack. But the reason is it helps balance blood sugars in a certain way. You have this kind of dip, so we eat something to give us this peak, right? And then if we don't have anything, we have this big dip again, so it's this roller coaster ride. So if we can have those snacks between, instead of going like this, we're actually going like this. So it's a little more stabilized. But do we ever correct the problem? If we stop snacking, we're back to big problems a lot of times, right? So we don't actually correct the problem. We're just going like this. Your body is created on a 24-hour circadian rhythm is what it's called. And so your body is set up at certain times for certain hormones to be produced, for your stomach acids to be produced, for digestion. Everything's sort of set up on this schedule. And if we can retrain our bodies to get into that circadian rhythm, the blood sugars can actually balance out. And I've experienced this personally myself. I used to have hypoglycemia really bad when, again, I was working at the eye clinic. And, you know, we'd have patients come out of surgery and they'd have a patch on. I'd take them, take an arm, take them to the room, sit them down, remove the patch, and they'd be dizzy and you'd have to take them to the waiting area. Well, suddenly I'd go into my nice little attacks and I'd see stars and blacking out. And instead of this patient holding me, I'm holding them, trying to make it to their chair. And I would be faithful with my crackers and cheese or granola bar or whatever in my drawer. But until I got myself onto the even schedules, it actually corrected itself. And now I don't have an issue. Even if I happen to miss a meal, I can feel the weakness and probably dehydration sets in for me a little bit easier and my blood pressure a bit. But the actual hypoglycemia I was able to correct. Whereas medically, I was told I can never correct that, that I would always have to have something. So there is, you know, absolute hope. And even with grazing in general, you know, there are times, you know, certain circumstances, we have to look at each person individually as well. And, you know, I don't believe in, for example, you know, we can get really stuck on the two meals a day. And if we're putting into a lot of activity and children and especially seniors, your stomachs get a little bit smaller. You have to still get the number of calories you need in your day. And, you know, if my children are out running and playing in the afternoon, they need something for supper. But again, I'm going to focus on not giving them, well, not that I eat meat, but an example, I wouldn't give them a steak dinner kind of thing, right? But I would give them some fruit or something fibrous, some toast or something of this sort, something that's still quick digestion. Now, when it comes to grazing, my example for this is, do your feet ever get tired when you walk all day? Do you ever need to sit and rest?
Yep.
And it's the same with our digestive system. Somehow we think that our digestive system can work all the time and it's not a big deal. But this is why we see so many digestion issues. You know, 80-85% of all my cases stems from a digestion problem. And that's because the stomach never has a chance to set itself up with the hydrochloric acid and whatever it needs for digestion. And so grazing isn't always an ideal thing. If you do need a snack here and there, you know, make sure it's light and fibrous again, like a fruit or a vegetable.
Banana but especially fills a bit.
What's that?
A banana.
Yeah. Gives you that boost of sugar as well. All right, sorry, was there a question? Yes.
Okay, I've got a question from the previous slide. I'm a builder, but trouble is living in older homes.
Yes.
Or even newer homes that are in a, that have mold in them.
That's
mold
right. Yes.
What irritation does that come to the body? Like, what kind of diseases come out of that kind of
scenario? With mold, a lot of allergies, a lot of respiratory problems, cancer. It really is serious. Mold is a very serious thing because when you get mold spores in you, it's difficult to get rid of. So you pretty much want to do whatever it takes to get out of that environment or clean it up. So it is, you know, black mold is a very serious thing. Okay, an exercise we talked about yesterday. And again, we know that exercise in general, if you did, 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, you can reduce your risk of any cancer by about 50%. So we know that exercise is a very good prevention as well as reversal of cancer. So what are the elements of cancer? What would a protective lifestyle look like? A proper diet. We want lots of fruits, vegetables, cereal grains, nuts. Basically, foods as grown. Foods that God gave us. He knew what our bodies needed, so He created the fuel for it, didn't He? And these foods, you know, will also, in a nice balance and so forth, especially our fruits and vegetables, make our bodies alkaline. And then we have proper weight is important. Regular meals without snacks, regular aerobic exercise, and sunlight in moderation. We'll be talking about sunlight coming up, but we all need sunlight, even though the scare is out there to stay out of the sun. And we know stress control. We've seen where scientists actually will take red blood cells and study them under a microscope and watch them change shape and disfigure from stress. So stress is something we all need to figure out ways of being able to manage it. And then we have something, especially in our fruits and vegetables, that are called phytochemicals. And phytochemicals, sometimes people get those mixed up with antioxidants. But phytochemicals, think of them as the ones that give color to your fruits and your vegetables. And that's what helps fight the cancer and prevent cancer as well. And we know our berries are especially high, our blueberries, strawberries, raspberries. The berries are very high in the phytochemicals as well. But anything with color, if you ever have a choice of something color or not color, choose with color. So my example is usually an onion. If you have a choice of a red onion or a white or yellow onion, your red onion is going to have more of your phytochemicals in it. So anything with those colors. And they're always finding more names and different forms of phytochemicals that are always growing and adding to the list that they're researching. And I think we'll never find them all, to be honest. I think our fruits and vegetables, in many cases, because of sin, of course, a lot of it has degressed. But I believe that our fruits and vegetables are so powerful compared to what we've even imagined at this point. There's a lot more nutrition to it. Now, how many of you are familiar with the Adventist Health Study being done right now? And a number of you are enrolled. I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Butler when I was speaking in Washington camp meeting just a few weeks ago. And I saw his actual presentation of the updates of that. And he was to forward that to me because I was hoping to share it with you this week because he wasn't able to make it to our camp meeting. So I'll see if I've received that by the end of the week and be able to share it with you. But one thing that stood out in my mind that I was really quite shocked with is they have found that television viewing increases our risk of cancer by 30%. Isn't that amazing? 30% just by watching television. We're talking regular television more so. Yes. Not 3ABN. Hopefully not. Let's clarify that, especially because I'm being recorded here. No, I'm just talking basic television type things.
Is that watching TV more than 4 hours?
He didn't actually state time. Yes, and that was one thing that went through my mind was how often kind of thing. Yeah. But it sounded like something people would do routinely every evening kind of thing. Something that's routinely, not just periodically, but yes.
Is that because of elevated cortisol levels because of violence?
That is my understanding. I mean, it can be due to some radiation, but I believe it's more the fact of what you're watching. With that stress, it's kicking off that cortisol constantly. And when we watch television, you know, sometimes we say, well, I know what's true and what's not, and it's just a movie. But your body does not know, and your body actually goes through the physical changes and reactions as if you were really there. And even watching the news will do the same thing. And doesn't Ellen White mention something about be careful to not get caught up even in the news because it can be discouraging? And so there you go. If we're sitting and watching the news over and over. How many of you feel real good when you watch the news? No, you know, I kind of turn it on, I watch the weather, I kind of get the highlights and we're done, you know. And if I do that once a week, I'm happy. And the truth is, if there's anything that's really happened major, I'm usually told about it how many times a day. You hear about it somewhere, don't you? So, you know, but yes.
So it could be a combination of many things.
Right.
I always had a problem watching television because I always had to have something to eat at the same time.
Well, that's right.
And then if I was watching TV and eating, I wasn't doing anything to burn off the calories that I was just consuming.
Exactly.
So 4 or 5 hours a day of that. And you can understand what that's all about.
That's right. There's probably a number of factors that play a role in this. And I do speak about this for weight management or weight loss as well. Because as the day goes on, your metabolism slows down. And when you watch television, it slows down even more. It, you know, it actually is slower watching television than it is sleeping. You'll burn more calories sleeping than you do watching TV. So I say, if you're tired, go to bed. Don't fall asleep in front of the TV. Yes?
Of course, Dr. David, it's not just also the TV, but it includes the television, the computer.
Yes.
My work is through the computer.
Right.
All my news I get from the computer.
Yes.
Of course, along with the other work that I do, so that also adds up to
it that. Does. Yes, and the fact we're sitting and not moving, and so there's lots of different, exactly, lots of different. Okay, so there's different treatments of cancer. You know, the lifestyle, which I just mentioned, is most important, number one, for prevention and for cure kind of idea. There's natural supplements one can get into. I talked to you about the Laetrile, which is the B17 the other day. I'm going to mention to you next about salvestrols, which I'm quite excited I've learned about recently. But you know, you can get into some of these grasses, the barley greens, the wheat grass, this type of thing. That really boosts that immune system. And these are excellent to even put a little bit into your shakes, your smoothies, for anybody. Because again, very powerful in antioxidants. Your omega-3 fats are good for the immune system, but be very careful with your omega-6 if you are fighting cancer. Omega-6 has been shown to actually increase cancer tumor growth. So focus more on your omega-3s out of all your omega fats versus your omega-6 when you are having those. Probiotics we know play a big role just because knowing that cancer is yeast and fungus-based, probiotics are what build up your good bacteria in your system. You have a good and bad bacteria in the intestinal tract, and so probiotics are your good bacteria to help balance that out. If you ever take antibiotics, you should always follow them up with a couple weeks of probiotics, like Acidophilus. Many of you have heard of Acidophilus. That is one of the types, one of the strains of probiotics. But you should actually take a multi-strained probiotic, which gives you that variety of good bacteria. And vitamin D, we know, plays a huge role in cancer prevention and cancer itself. One example, again, under vitamin D, we'll get a little more into this, but one study was done when I was doing my master's, I believe. We had studied this man that actually lived in Alberta, and he had prostate cancer. And when he went down to Florida, because he had so much sunlight, it completely reversed. And then he came back to Alberta, and it came back again. He went back to Florida, it reversed again. And now he lives there and has never had it return at this point. So they were just trying to emphasize how vitamin D plays a huge role in the immune system in both prevention and reversal. And you know, medically they're recognizing the need of vitamin D as well. So cleansing, you know, a lot of times when you have cancer, you do a lot of cleanses, a lot of juicing, this type of thing. The reason for it, again, being able to promote those healthy cells to overtake the cancerous cells. But at this point, I always like to warn people, if you are doing this, work with somebody. Again, in my studies, what I have, through my dissertation, I studied cancer for my dissertation for my PhD, and 50% of all cases of people who die from cancer do not die from cancer. They die from starvation. And so I can't stress enough to be very careful when it comes to cleansing and this type of thing for cancer. There's a place for it, but you need to do it, you know, carefully and with somebody. And be really careful, because especially if you're going for some of the chemo treatments and some of these things, they already destroy your appetite. You're already not feeling well. And your stomach will continue to shrink, and pretty soon you have no interest in eating. So the most important thing I work with my cancer clients with is making sure they still get their calorie intake, keeping their energy up, keeping their nutrition up. Really important. The key is, what you put in your mouth has to be good. That is the main focus. But starving it will not work, okay? Surgery, sometimes surgery is helpful, because if you can remove that certain portion, depending on your cancer and whatever, but you know, some people say, well, never do surgery. Again, it's a personal choice. But sometimes if they can remove just that tumor, the body can put more energy into healing now, and that tumor is now removed. So that is sometimes an option that, you know. Radiation, fortunately, it's starting to be a little bit more focused to the area instead of the whole body. So sometimes that's a better choice than chemotherapy. But again, chemotherapy, if this is the route you choose to go, you know, as a nutritionist, I don't judge my clients. They have to make their choice as to what they want to do. I'm still here to support them through it, because nutritionally, that needs to still be there. No matter what you choose to do, you still need the basic laws of health to help support you. But I want to share one quickly with you, and it's called salvestrols.
Sorry, Debbie. When you said if you take antibiotics, follow up with the probiotics?
Yes, correct.
If you don't eat dairy, where are you going to get your probiotics? Are you going to supplement?
Your probiotics. Your probiotics in general, if you are eating correctly and your lifestyle is well-balanced, you're going to have a well-balanced intestinal tract. Your body makes good bacteria, it makes bad bacteria. So you want that proper balance. It's only if you throw it off balance, you need to then take probiotics to help it get back on balance.
Can you find it somewhere else
other than yogurt? Other than what, sorry?
Yogurt, which is
a dairy. Oh, and you know, most yogurts, by the time you get it, the probiotics are dead. So, yeah, it'll say that. So, but because of the refrigeration and the travel and the transport, most of the times it's dead. So you need to, if you're going to rely on that, you have to go for a very more fresh yogurt and make sure that it's really live, you know, bacterial. But that's right. That's right. Oh, yeah, you can buy the probiotic without the dairy. Yeah. And in just capsule form. You can do probiotics. Yeah. Yeah. There's, I mean, supplements in that case is natural. It's not synthetic made. It's just, it's non-dairy versus, it's the same thing. They have to grow it. Even in the capsule form, it's just vegetable, well, not vegetable based, but non-dairy based. It's the same thing they add to the yogurt to make it. Yes, you can buy live. Yes, you can. Yeah, or you make your own yogurt using just the capsules, too.
Can I insert some idea? I drink milk that is powdered milk from soy milk. Now, is that healthier than ordinary milk?
The question is, powdered soy milk, is it healthier than ordinary milk? You have to read the ingredients. I'm starting to try to refrain more from the powdered soy milks, just because a lot of them tend to have what is called corn syrup solids. And that's one of your worst sugars. So if you can go for a liquid like the Silk or the So Nice or make your own, that's a little bit better actually than the powders even. And some of the powders have casein, which by the way is a protein found in milk, and we add that to our powdered milks and our soy cheeses. And casein, we know, is almost like turning on the light switch for cancer on and off, especially breast cancer. And so we really have to watch the casein. How many of you have seen the movie Forks Over Knives? Yeah, and there he really gets into about the casein. It's based on the China study. You can buy the book, The China Study. If you want to learn more about that, I definitely recommend it, because he explains it well, and you'll understand it very well. Yes?
And another problem with the soy soy now, you have to be really, really cautious about genetically modified soy because
correct.
It's basically all modified with Loader. The exception of a very, very few.
Well, he's just saying about the genetically modified soybeans, and we will touch on that to come. So,
I can't hear what he said.
I need to kind of move on. I know there's a lot of comments and questions, but we'll try for the end. I just need to kind of move on here quickly. And I might, a lot of what you're bringing up is what I'd be hitting on anyway. So, okay, so with the salvestrol, many studies have been done by Professor Dan Burke and Professor Gary. I don't have his last name. I think my strawberries are hiding it. Sorry. But you can Google this and find information. But this is natural plant derived, coming from berries, and strawberries are very high in salvestrol, but any of your berries are super high in salvestrol. I'll show you some other sources here as we go up too, but they are safely eaten in the diet. Is it safe to eat berries?
No.
Yeah, well, you're getting salvestrol, so it's safe. It's a very safe thing that we have now find. There's different salvestrols. They're finding more all the time. They're researching it. So the same way as vitamin E is comprised of different what they call tocopherols, there's like five different tocopherols in vitamin E, the salvestrols, we're starting to find different ones as well. The same way as phytochemicals, we're finding the different ones, and we're finding different antioxidants. So salvestrols is a new thing we've discovered, and it's excellent for preventing and fighting cancer. It's particularly high in red and green health-giving plant species. And isn't that interesting? Remember what I said? Men need to think what color?
Red.
Red, and women need to think?
Green.
Green. So here's our two most powerful foods, very high in salvestrol. And so these are our foods especially high in salvestrol. And strawberries, number one, and then cranberries, oranges, tangerines, grapes. Olives, we know, are a good source of salvestrols. There's herbs that contain salvestrols. This is the, anyone know what this is? Milk thistle, yes, and very good for cleansing the liver. And now we find out it has salvestrols in it as well. And including basil, parsley, sage, rosemary, thyme, mint, artichoke. Look at this, right? This all has, and even the dandelion, has salvestrols in it. So, do you remember me talking about the B17, right? Here we are, salvestrols are very similar. They're non-toxic to normal, healthy cells. Again, they are activated by an enzyme, and this is that special enzyme right here. And this enzyme, it's a protein enzyme. Cancer is based on protein. Cancer is grown, it's a protein-based formula. So here it finds this enzyme, which is only found in cancer cells, which activates the salvestrols, causing the cancer cells to stop growing or die without harming the normal cells. Isn't that something? You know, when I learned this, I thought, how wonderful. You know, God's health message is so simple, and we're always looking for something more complex. You know, I was doing a health seminar once, a health retreat, and a community person had heard about it. And he called me about it and asked all these questions and said, okay, I want to register. I want to come. And at the end of our conversation, he said, I have a question for you. You as Adventists have what you call the health message, correct? I said, yes. Do you believe it's what God gave you? Yes. Do you believe it's what heals your body and prevents sickness? Yes. Tell me then, he said, when something new is on the market, a new product, a new therapy treatment, why is it the Adventists are first in line? Isn't that an eye-opener, coming from a community person? Isn't that true? These therapies that are out there, we're first ones there. What? This will do what? If we think how, and if we meditate, or if we, you know, all these different sources? No, we have one person to meditate on, Christ. He's given us the health laws, and it's simple. But sometimes it's too simple, and we think, well, it's too simple. We've got to make it more complex. There's got to be something more to it. There's really not. The simpleness was for our sake, so we can do it. But if we dig really deep, there's nothing simple about it, is there? Who'd ever think of something like salvestrols being in all these berries? So here it is again. You know, it comes through, it hooks onto this enzyme. It does not hook onto any normal cells, but if it hooks onto that cancer cell, it'll destroy it. Those who have cancer can take this in a supplement form where they've actually taken it, lab cultured it, and condensed it, because you'd need to eat tons of berries to make it happen if you're in a severe case of cancer, stage 3 or 4. So you can go this route. But, you know, we can do the berries, we can do these fruits, we can do these vegetables, and we need to increase these in our diet. So, I hope to encourage everybody to get into berries, because now's the season. Fill your freezer, right? Okay, we'll move along. We'll probably touch on different things in the different categories that can kind of fit into still cancer and prevention and so forth. But I want to move on to carbohydrates. So let's get into diet a bit more now. So carbohydrates is divided into two categories. We have simple carbohydrates and we have complex carbohydrates. The complex carbohydrates are your grains, your vegetables, your fruits, legumes, rice, even pasta, whole grain pasta, right? These will actually help slim you down. People say to me, I can't eat carbs because they'll make me fat. Well, why would that be? Carbs, they say, actually slim you down. For why? They are naturally low in calories. Two, they cannot add directly to your body fat because of the fiber. It's not pure sugar. Your body has to break it down, and it uses that fiber and puts it into your bloodstream at interval, you know, nice regular levels. And they speed up your metabolism. Do any of those things, do you think any of these things will cause you to get fat? It's quite the opposite, isn't it? So what is the issue? Many times we put carbs all into one category, and simple carbohydrates on a total different side of the scale. They are refined foods, such as your white bread, your white pasta, your white rice, your cakes, your pies, your cookies, you know, this type of thing. They have little or usually no fiber. So they will enter your bloodstream at very quick intervals, those sugars, and then your body can actually store it as fat. Secondly here, or thirdly, they contain a high number of calories, and they are very few in nutrients. Remember, the whiter the bread, the sooner you're dead. I have a hard time taking a white bun because this saying comes to my head every time now.
I never take it.
You're smart. Empty calories. Simple carbohydrates are what we call empty calories. They have lots of calories, but very few nutrients. So they are empty calories. Have you ever had where you've eaten, you know you're full, but you're still somehow hungry? It's because your body needs nutrients. So we keep eating, trying to fill ourselves, but our stomachs are full, but our bodies are not nourished. And so we can overeat and eat too much of this. Now the complex carbohydrates are what we call full calories. Very few calories, but lots of nutrients in them, providing nourishment for the body. You know, the trick comes in here with not so much those complex carbohydrates, but what we put on it now. So we have our whole grain piece of bread. What are you going to choose to put on that? And many times, jam, that's right, butter, and these kinds of things add up the calories and the fat very quickly. So a lot of times we blame the carbs, but in reality, it's what we're putting on it that we have to think about as well. So our diet, our plate, should actually kind of look like this for a well-balanced diet. And people get, you know, kind of frustrated sometimes when I'm promoting a vegetarian diet. They say, well, I can't do that because it's too hard sitting and planning that whole meal. How do I do that? And one should put together a talk on just how to plan a meal. You know, I try it again, make it simple, because if it's complex, people aren't going to try. But I want you to picture in your mind a glass plate, okay? You've got your glass empty dinner plate. Everyone can picture what 2/3 of that plate would look like, right? 2/3 of that is going to be your complex carbohydrates. That's going to be your salad, your steamed veggies, your baked potato, your rice, your, you know, whatever that those complex carbohydrates. Now in that other one third or less is going to be your protein. And your protein might be what? A nut roast, some lentils, bean, chili, you know, it might be just some nuts on your salad. It might be some hemp hearts. You know, this is all part of your protein. And then you've got your fat. Now, I've kind of been relaxed in this area by putting 18 to 25%. But in reality, I tend to go 18%, you know, 20%. If you have heart disease or diabetes and you're trying to reverse it, you've got to actually lower that a little bit more. But your fat now is what you're using to garnish your food. So you've got some fat in your seeds, in your nuts, in your hemp hearts. You might make a nice salad dressing. You might have some olives. This is what you're going, where you're going to get your fat. Avocados too, yes. Yes. That's correct. That's right. And we'll talk about fats still coming. Yes. All right. Any other questions on this? So far, we're going to get into sugars and things like that as we go here. Let's talk about cholesterol. Cholesterol is found in only animal foods, animal products. Anyone here who's ever taken the CHIP program? Okay. Yes, I even have CHIP leaders in the audience. So tell me, what do we say? What's an easy way to remember if it has cholesterol? If it has? A face or a mother. That's right. So people say to me, oh, you're vegetarian, you must, but you eat fish. And I say, well, I don't grow fish in my garden, but, you know, does fish have a face or a mother? Yes. So does it have cholesterol? Yes. Many times we think fish does not have cholesterol, but fish has the same amount of cholesterol in many cases as chicken or beef. So the cholesterol issue is not better whether you eat fish, chicken, or beef. It's all got cholesterol, right? Okay, now we have fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts. How much cholesterol do these have?
None.
Our plant foods have zero cholesterol. Now people say to me, but you need cholesterol. And I've been talking about good cholesterol, haven't I? So how are you going to get the good cholesterol? Okay, your body is going to make the good cholesterol. How? Different ways. Exercise, we talked about, will make good cholesterol, right? And good essential fats will help your body make it. So there's different things you do that'll make your body make cholesterol, and it'll make the right amount if you give it what it needs. But no cases do you need cholesterol from food. The cholesterol that comes from food is the bad cholesterol. Okay? So tell me something. What about a coconut now? How many say coconuts have cholesterol? Okay, how many say they don't? Does it have a face?
No.
Does it have a mother? No cholesterol. So then what is the big issue about coconuts? Why do we think it has cholesterol? Saturated fats. That is correct. Now, animal products have cholesterol, and they also have saturated fat. Some plant products have saturated fat, but they don't have cholesterol. Now, do you know what the recipe is for the bomb? Saturated fat and cholesterol. That's what makes the bomb. So, for example, you can take, they did a study with mice and they've injected pure palm kernel oil and they tested their cholesterol and nothing changed. But as soon as they injected the most minute amount of cholesterol, their cholesterol went right through the roof. It's the combination that becomes an issue. Now, saturated fat, on the other hand, saturated means concentrated, more or less, right? So you need to watch how much of it you eat, because the calories can add up very quickly, and then you're over your percent of how much fat you should take in. So even though something like, you know, has saturated fat, like peanut butter, what else? Coconuts, some of these things have saturated fat. If you're eating too much of them, they may cause you to gain weight. And so you want to limit those a little bit more and, you know, not go overboard. Just because you like avocados doesn't mean you should eat three of them, right? A half, hopefully, is good. So, you know, you can enjoy them. Now, if you're eating a meat and dairy diet and you have an issue with cholesterol already, your doctor is going to say you shouldn't eat coconut, you shouldn't eat avocados, you shouldn't eat olives, because that saturated fat is actually going to increase your cholesterol because you're already taking cholesterol in your diet. Does that make sense? And that's why we tend to think coconuts and such have cholesterol, because medically we tell you not to eat it if you have high cholesterol, because you're still eating cholesterol. So the combination is the issue. So if you choose to put away foods with cholesterol, you can eat avocados and coconuts and all these different foods, and you're just not going to worry about your cholesterol. So here are some foods with cholesterol. Again, you will see your plant products have zero cholesterol. Milk has cholesterol. You know, egg whites do not. It's in the actual yolk where the baby chick is formed. It relies on lots of cholesterol, lots of nourishment, lots of fat. Ice cream, butter, tuna. See, tuna even has. Clams, crab. The list goes on. And I always tell people, if all else fails, avoid beef brains. Because it's kind of high. Or if you want to kill yourself really quick. I remember again, Pastor Finley, he has some interesting comments at times. And one of his workshops, he said, women, if you're frustrated with your husbands and you don't want to divorce them, but you want to get rid of them, just feed them 3 eggs every day for breakfast and you'll never be charged for murder. So beef brains will take you out even faster. Sorry, this is a little blurred, but I love this little comic here where it says, that number has nothing to do with the lottery or the stock market. It's your cholesterol level. Hopefully that is not the case, right? If so, you're probably eating beef brains. All right. Chromium. Food sources, brewer's yeast, nutritional yeast, but especially your grains. All your grains have chromium. Chromium is excellent in balancing sugars, balancing your blood sugar levels. And depletion from refined grains and sugars. So if you're eating your simple carbohydrates, again, your refined flours, your refined sugars, there is no chromium in that. It helps burn fat. So here we are again, complex carbohydrates containing the whole grains has the chromium, which helps burn the fat. In fact, a number of supplements for weight loss and weight management, if you would read the ingredients they came out with for maybe a year there, the big thing was chromium, just pumping the chromium in these for people to burn the fat, to lose weight on these natural supplements. And chromium was the major ingredient. Now the thing happened was people started getting quite nauseous and sick and vomiting and dizziness and all the above from it. And the reason is if you don't need the chromium, then it'll make you sick. It'll start to make you feel nauseous and such. So if one is doing a chromium supplement, it should always be chelated or chelated, however you want to say it, which means that your body will throw it off if it doesn't need it. So that's the form you need to take a chromium supplement. Many cases, people who are diabetic or have hypoglycemia are low in chromium. So when I'm working with a client and I see them low in chromium, I will ask them if they've been tested for diabetes from their doctor and send them to their doctor for that testing.
Was there some negative feedback on brewer's yeast recently in the...
You know what, the nutritional yeast flakes, I've seen one email kind of float around having some issues, and but other than that, I've never seen or heard anything else to back it up at this point. I went to Black Hills, I was there as an intern for a short time, and while there, we were kind of avoiding the nutritional yeast flakes, so it came down to what is the issue with it, and they say that the nutritional yeast flakes grown on molasses, that something that they use, the most minute, whatever it is, might be GMO-based. And that was the whole issue of it. So, and that's not even confirmed. So at this point, I haven't jumped on the bandwagon of panic, and I still use it.
And just running back a little bit to the previous one, we hear a lot, doctors talk a lot about natural cholesterol, or you have natural cholesterol, which is not meat-based, so there's no...
So the thing is, you're eating a vegan diet and your cholesterol's still high?
Yeah, you
That can happen. In some cases, that can happen where your body is just making too much cholesterol. However, in many cases, there's other things. Like they might be eating casein in their soy cheese and such. Now, even though that doesn't give you cholesterol, it'll keep the cholesterol from lowering. And so I can pull them off the soy cheese and suddenly their cholesterol will lower. So sometimes it's cases like that that can cause an issue too. And we have to kind of go beyond that. Like even blood pressure, some people say, well, the doctors told me my blood pressure is naturally high and I do everything right. But when that's why sometimes the lifestyle centers work well. And that's why that's one of my goals, because when I actually can live with that person and see them eating and living, it's just they don't realize some of the things you're still doing that are causing these issues that we think we're eating right or we think we're living right, but there's still things slipping in that are causing this that can be improved.
The doctor from who wrote a book, China Study?
Yes.
I have high cholesterol level. He said you have inherited that.
You've inherited, yes. And there are cases of that. That's true. And you do have to watch your fats, too. Like, a lot of times we're vegan, but we get into a lot of oils and a lot of fats. And this is an issue for trying to lower our cholesterol because it's not the right fat to raise your good cholesterol to bring that ratio back into balance as well. So it controls blood sugar levels, as I mentioned, and we talked about the chelation. All right, C is for cleansing. How many think they have to ever cleanse their body internally? Yeah, we need to in some way. And the same way as you wash your body on the outside, you also need to clean it on the inside. So I won't go into this for, I just want to quickly just breeze through this, but there's different reasons for cleansing. And so, again, you know, you can look over some of these to eliminate waste, purify your glands, basically just cleanse the body overall, right? Sometimes it's good to cleanse to help correct appetite and food cravings. And you know, when Ellen White was changing her diet, what did she tell her cook? Does anyone know? What did she say? Don't bring me, I want to eat only this pure diet. No matter how much I scream for it, don't prepare it for me. I want to be able to eat this pure diet, right? She actually was going through a form of cleansing. She saw that she had to change her taste buds back to the way that they needed to be. And so cleansing in some cases does that for us. It takes us off those foods, and the foods that many times injure our body are the foods that we're addicted to, the foods that we crave. And those are the foods many times we have an allergic type reaction to and this type of thing. So cleansing is good for that. I use it a lot to find food sensitivities and allergies. I've mentioned already about being careful. It is helpful for specific diseases such as cancer, but be careful with it. And some people choose to do fasting as a form of cleansing for spiritual growth, character growth, and so forth. So when you are sick, you know, when you have a cold or a flu, it's smart to actually cleanse in some way. It might be that you're just going to do a liquid diet of soups, broths, smoothies. You know, this is a form of cleansing. A lot of times when we think of cleansing, we think it needs to be some, you know, kind of weird concoctions and pills and all this kind of stuff. But that's not what cleansing is. You know, when, like I said, when you go to bed at night and you wake up in the morning, you've gone through that 12-hour cleanse. So there's different types of cleanses, but when you are sick and you have a cold and such, instead of putting your energy into digestion, you want that energy to go into healing your body. And so just, you know, again, trying to do very simple things to digest. Your digestive system sometimes just needs a rest, it needs cleanse. And I've talked about some of those. You don't want to cleanse to lose weight, per se, in the way of starving yourself to lose fat. That is not healthy, that's not a wise choice. But you want a cleanse that will actually speed up your metabolism if that's what you're trying to do is lose weight. Or you want the cleanse that slows down your metabolism if you're trying to gain weight. And if it's the proper cleanse, it'll work for either person and do both things, basically bringing your body into balance. And absorption. Many times our body will make a mucus coating to protect itself from toxins. And doing a type of a cleanse to remove that mucus will then increase our absorption of the nutrients. So who should cleanse? Anyone wishing to cleanse their system of toxins and impurities, anyone wanting to improve our health or our lifestyle habits, and those between the ages of 5 to 100. If you're over 100, we'll make an exception even for you. But there's different types of cleanses. You could choose to do raw foods. So we've talked a little bit about the benefits of raw versus steamed foods and so forth. And I've sort of recommended that 70% being raw if possible, 60-70%, and then maybe 30% cooked. That's kind of, to me, what's for balance I find. Your beans and your grains and such, cooking those better. And eating, more raw foods in the way of more live enzymes, and it's easier on your digestive system. However, you may choose to go completely raw for a week or two, and that is an excellent cleanse, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. Juicing, but again, when it comes to juicing, get some books out of the library or a health food store or something and read about which combinations and what they're good for. Because in some cases, not every combination is good for everyone. Somebody may do all orange juice, and if they're quite overweight and have a serious heart issue, you could have an instant heart attack. So you can't just pick and choose and do that for a long period of time. One day is usually not an issue, but if you say, I'm just going to do orange juice for a full week, that might not be good for you, right? So you have to choose. Fasting works for some people. I know some people who can, who do it for spiritual reasons. They fast to pray and just drink water, and they'll do fine for a couple of days. That's fine. You have to know your body and what works for you. Again, don't do it to lose weight or cut calories. That's not smart, right? For me, I can't make a day on fasting. I just crash too much, too quickly. And so, you have to choose what works. You might say, I'm going to cut out all fat, all sugar, and you might even add salt to that. So for a full week, I'm not going to eat sugar, fats, or salt. And your body will cleanse. Again, many of you are familiar with the CHIP program in here, and we have the cleanse called the Jump Start. And those who are leaders, I know you've seen, those who do the Jump Start program truly jump start, don't they? They achieve almost double of what someone who doesn't do that cleanse. And that cleanse, the only thing we're doing is exactly this. We're pulling them off of the fat, sugars, and salt for that 1 week. There are supplements and herbal mixtures and all sorts of things you can buy, and sometimes they have their purpose and place. If somebody is very toxic, sometimes it's difficult to cleanse too quickly. And doing something like that, milk thistle or dandelion greens, that will cleanse the liver. Water, we talked about water already, but water is a cleanse. So really important to drink our 8 glasses a day. That's a continuous cleansing, cleaning of the body. And then, we might do specific organ cleansing, such as gallbladder. And recently, again, I had a lady who just contacted me and did a gallbladder cleanse and saved herself having gallbladder surgery. She's able to remove the gallstones. Doesn't work for everyone, but if it's worth a try, if you're up to it, and it saves surgery, why not, right? Now there's bowel cleansers, and it's really important. The bowel is the most important part to cleanse. So whatever cleanse you're choosing, make sure your bowels are being cleansed. Because if you're pulling these toxins out, and they're not getting out of your body, you're just going to reabsorb them. Okay, so you need to do some form of cleansing in the bowels. So fiber, if you're doing that raw food diet for a week, you've got lots of fiber, so that's really going to make things happen. Increasing your water is going to help. You could get into laxative tea for a very short time. I promote a lemon cleanse. I've written the Ultimate Lemon Cleanse book, and the ABC does carry that if you want to peek at it. But in there, we do use a laxative tea for that 7 to 10 days. But I don't recommend it on an ongoing basis because your body can become dependent on laxative tea. There's something called senna, and that herb, your body, it'll put you into spasms, and eventually your body will just have to rely on it.
How about dried prunes?
Yes, that's right. Prunes, that's right. Any of those kind of things would work, psyllium husk powder. Here is the psyllium plant. And you could get it into the powder, the more granulated form of the husks. This is a natural fiber, so you could even add that to your food. Some people add to the food for extra fiber. You can mix a tablespoon in water, you can mix a tablespoon into juice, whatever, and drink that in the morning to get things going. The main thing is to drink enough liquid following it, because it can actually plug you up if you don't have enough liquid to get it going. This is in Metamucil, by the way. So that is the base to Metamucil. So you could actually go into a health food store and just buy this pure and use it versus Metamucil. Colonics is something that's been really taking off more so. I don't tend to promote it because we've talked a little bit about the intestinal bacteria, the good and bad bacteria. Colonics will wipe out the good as well as the bad. So it has its purpose and place at times, especially if somebody overdoses on drugs or, you know, that type of thing, especially I'll promote that right away. But to be doing it on an ongoing basis, it can destroy that good intestinal flora, whereas psyllium husk powder will not, fiber, any of these won't. And salt water sounds really gross, but it actually works quite well. It works on gravity and the way you make sure nothing else is in your stomach. You do this salt water first thing in the morning and it just literally flushes you out. And the nice thing about it is two things. It will never destroy your good intestinal flora. Secondly, it works like an intestinal broom. It'll actually cut that mucus coating on the lining of your intestinal tract and remove it so that you've got that increase in absorption of nutrients. Then it varies according to the person as well. So it's like 1 to 2 teaspoons of salt in 2 to 4 cups of water. But the most important thing I have to stress is if you're going to do that, do it first thing in the morning. Make sure you don't eat or drink anything other than water until you're sure that's through you. If you do, you will absorb whatever salt water is left, and you don't want to do that. So make sure it's through you. But it really works well.
And just a quick question. So making sure you've had bowel movements, is that just one or several?
Like regular or when you're cleansing?
I guess if you get up in the morning, you try the salt.
Yes. Oh, the salt will actually give you a number of bowel movements in a row. It'll just keep cleaning, yeah.
When did you start eating?
Once you stop running to the washroom. Each time you go to the washroom, drink some plain water, and that'll kind of help. And once you stop running, you know you're through. Yeah. And when you're doing something like the lemon cleanse and using that, the first couple of days you're running for a bit, and then eventually you're clean right out and you're not running the same. Yes?
What about chia seeds and flax seeds?
That's right. That would fit into your fiber category. Yes, increased fiber.
You didn't mention salt, though.
No, just salt water. If you're doing salt in your food?
There's two kinds of salt.
Oh, okay.
I think that's quite important to know about that salt.
You're saying, well, for the actual cleanse, you want to use a non-iodized sea salt because that helps your body not absorb it as well. Yeah. And you know, basically, do whatever it takes to clean out that colon. As I say, any of those other, you know, those choices, you know, whatever. Adding on a daily basis, even when you're not cleansing, you need to make sure that your colon is constantly being cleansed. Otherwise, you've got those toxins. You know, everyone's heard of John Wayne, right? And when he died, they did, he's actually in history, not just for being a famous actor anymore. He's famous for how heavy his colon was. Can you imagine? I hope I am never famous for that. But they took his colon and they weighed it. And any guesses how much it weighed?
50
pounds. Yes, can you imagine? So the point is, sometimes I wonder, you clear out your colon and you step on your scale and you might lose 20 pounds, just like that, right? Anyways, of course the colon weighs some too, but I'm not sure if that included the colon or if that was just, you know, the material within the colon. I'm not positive on that one, but wow. So do what it takes, dynamite, whatever, make it happen, right? Get it out of there. Does anyone know what he actually died of? Was it heart disease? Did he have a heart? I thought it might be heart disease, but I'm not positive. Okay, so this was the lemon diet that I have mentioned, that I have written. The lemon is just a wonderful I'll just jump ahead. If you want to check that out, like I said, the ABC do carry it. It's called the Ultimate Lemon Cleanse. But let me go on to now the benefits of a lemon in general, just implementing lemons into your diet. So a lemon aids the removal of impurities and the fermentative effects of a bad liver. So when you are cleansing, this is why the liver is usually the first to become toxic and have issues. And so if we can include lemons in our diet on a regular basis, it'll be taking some of that burden off of your liver constantly. It helps to repair as well as cleanse. That's what's so nice about the lemon cleanse, is as it's cleansing, it's also repairing. It's healing the lining of the intestinal tract and so forth. It has properties that'll increase elimination through the skin, therefore helping to reduce a fever. So if someone is sick, you can give them lemon in their water, but you can also, if they have a fever, you wipe them down with a cool cloth. And especially infants, what to do, you know? You just put some lemons into that water with that cool cloth, and it'll be absorbed through their skin. It's a germicide. It has powerful effects on the germ life in all different strains of different influenzas, different flus. It's a local antiseptic for offensive bad breath. You know why? Because it aids in digestion, and bad breath comes from your stomach. So if you can get your stomach digesting, then the breath is not an issue. And so lemon juice will aid in that. It'll destroy at least 20 different germs. And we know that because look at all the different cleaners now that are using the citrus as part of their sprays and their cleaners, right? Yes?
Can you overdo on lemon? Like, my children love to take their water and they just, I don't know, sometimes it looks like they dump half a cup of lemon in there and I tell them, no, just turn it off.
No, and I'll talk about that. It's coming right up here, but you can't actually. The only risk with it is the ascorbic acid, so you want to brush your teeth. So it can be hard on the enamel of the teeth is the only risk. So making sure you brush your teeth is most important, but I'll be addressing the acid idea here. Continue benefits, it'll help cut apart and remove mucus in the throat. So you know with singers or speakers, they'll suck on a lemon in order to cut that mucus. It contains high amounts of ascorbic acid, which is positive for the body, but at the same time, as I said, it can affect the enamel on your teeth. It's a mighty immune booster. So again, not just breaking the fever, but if someone has a cold or a flu, and it's killing the germs, and it's also building the immune system. And it's citrus juices. Okay, this is the acidic part now. These citrus juices tend to thin the blood naturally, and it'll convert the body to be more alkaline. So we think of it as a very acidy food, don't we? And it tastes acidy, but when lemon juice, the citric acid will quickly change an acid constitution into an alkaline one as soon as it hits your saliva. And so instead of it being acidic, it actually makes your body alkaline. Now, the other day I also mentioned that when do you want to be acidic? When do you want your body to be acidic?
When you're dead.
When you're dead. So unless you want to decompose while you're walking and talking, you don't want to be a an acid base, right? So there is, though, one part of your body that needs to be acidy, and that is your stomach. And unfortunately, we tend to make our bodies acidic instead of alkaline, and the one part we need to be acidic, we buffer all the time. And so actually the lemon juice, even though it makes your body alkaline, when it gets into the stomach with water, it'll make your stomach make hydrochloric acid to help you digest your food. And the natural thing that is found in lemons aids in digestion of protein, which is the hardest thing to digest as well. So isn't lemons wonderful? Yes. It's an amazing food. It's actually top out of any fruit and veggie, in my opinion. So phosphorus, which a lemon has, one of its grandest properties is its ability to digest proteins. Yes?
I've got a book on apple cider vinegar that says exactly the same thing as lemon. Is
correct.
Do you take it?
You know what? I've heard different opinions on it, and at this point, they put, of course, apple cider vinegar into a different category of vinegars. And yes, everything I've read on it is very similar to the lemon. For me personally, I still prefer the lemon. So, but, you know, I can't tell you that that's wrong. I don't have anything to go against it at this point. Yes?
How often should a generally healthy person be doing these cleansings?
You know, I'd say the same thing as when you clean your house. When is the two times a year you like to clean your house? Spring and fall. So that's what I tell people. Think about what kind of cleanse you can do in the spring and in the fall. And depending how you're feeling, your lifestyle, what's happening in your life, you're going to choose the cleanse that works for you at that time. Okay, won't go too much into this, but you know, there are some negative effects to cleansing, because as those toxins come out, it can, you know, be irritating. Even with our CHIP program, you know, we'd have our people come in cheerful and they'd start the jumpstart cleanse, and within just taking them off fats, salts, and sugar, and day two and day three, they are grumpy as all get out. Did you find that? And I mean, it would be like, whoa, and I'd have to tell myself, they're cleansing. But the key is to drink lots of water, because you might suffer headaches, you might suffer dark circles under your eyes, you might suffer these things, but the more water you drink, the faster you'll remove those toxins. Yes? No, it does not matter in this case. That is correct. Well, if you are using the actual rind, then you would want to either use organic, or you want to cut off that yellow part because it is dyed. Yes. And the white of a lemon and the white of the orange has more vitamin C in it than the actual fruit. Did you know that? And the white. And it also has bioflavonoids, which is the base to a lot of allergies, to help build that immune system to protect against allergens. So the white is important. And you know peppers? You know how you cut open a bell pepper and it's got the white? That is super high in nutrients as well. It's higher than the pepper itself, and we tend to cut that out with the seeds, right? So anyways, yes, so that kind of shows how the whole food is so important. Do you think from what you learned about seeds on Monday with the Laetrile and different things, what about pepper seeds? Do you think they'll hurt you? Do you think you'll grow a pepper in your stomach? Probably not, right? So if you get a seed, it's not the end of the world, I'm sure. Some of you might get an ache under your right shoulder blade in your back. This is very common. If you have that, that is telling you to cleanse. That is a symptom of liver overworking. Or it can also mean just drink more water, because that'll cleanse it too. So if you're not drinking enough water, increase your water, see if that helps. But do something to help that. Okay, and most of all, when you cleanse, you should experience, once you get through those headaches and toxins coming out and so forth, you should have energy, because if your digestion system is not working, 75% of your energy will go into digestion. And that's why so many times people say to me, well, I have no energy, what do I do? What pill can I take? It's not that. Let's get your digestion working and you'll suddenly have the energy. So a lot of times people are on a cleanse and they get this energy when they're expecting the opposite, you know? Oh, I'm just drinking this lemonade. How am I ever going to function? And suddenly their energy is there and they're shocked. That tells you that your digestion system's not working and there's a food that you're sensitive to or something that's causing problems. And if it, you'll have that clear mind, and you should never have hunger pains if you're doing the proper cleanse. Okay, you don't want to go calorie deficient. You want to get your calories, you want to get your nutrients, so you should not be hungry. It's not a starvation diet, all right? I think it's almost time that we have to end already. 12 o'clock, right? Is that our ending time? So I'm going to stop there, and I will continue tomorrow with vitamin D. And with the sunshine out, well, hopefully. Tomorrow it'll really be sunny. And you can absorb, it'll motivate you to absorb vitamin D. Let's just pray once again before everyone runs away. We'll have a quick word of prayer. Father in heaven, thank you again. Thank you for a new day. Here it is already Wednesday and the week is half gone, and how much we enjoy camp meeting, Lord. Just please help us to savor it, every moment of it. Help us to gain a blessing on moment by moment. We thank you for those blessings, both great and small. And we thank you for being with us and for giving us the knowledge and information that we're receiving from each of the workshops, and may we most of all be motivated to put into practice in some way some of it, at least a fraction of it, of what we learn, Lord, that we can better ourselves, improve our bodies and our lives, to be able to serve you more. And we just thank you and praise you for everything. In your holy name we pray. Amen. Yes, I'll give it to you right now. What's that?
That was for inflammation.
That was for, yes, inflammation and pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you take a credit card?
I don't, no. Okay. I can't do credit card. I'm not really set up for it, so check. Or you could pay me another time if it makes it easier. That's fine, too. So, yeah, the invoice is in here. Yeah, yeah, so not a problem. I know where to find you.
When you do your slides.
Yes.
Black font and blue background.
It's not good.
It's not good.
I know. I was trying to have
red
white.
On white.
Oh, red on white.
Red, yeah, from a distance. But black, okay. Blue, black and blue.
I know. I don't know how I missed some of the black ones.
Yeah.
I was trying to have white.
White, white, yeah, white
shows up.
Beautiful.
And
yeah.
I don't know how I had some black, but now I'm scared to touch it. So
okay.
I'll make sure I read it.
That's fine. Darlene, Jean was wondering about that.